we were like rebels at the time. So that's one of the reasons why we didn't get the popularity and everything. We were rebels. We were talking about fighting. We was gathering arms and, you know, legally, according to, the, you know, what the laws of the state say. We had all the weapons and everything else that, you know, planned because we did not trust the society. You know, the president had got killed. Martin Luther King had gotten killed. Malcolm X had gotten killed. The president's brother had gotten killed. So we were saying, oh, if, you know, if they can get wiped out like that, what it mean, you know, and what does it mean, what do we mean? We could be wiped away just like that. But we wasn't going to go down lying on our back. That was our plan at the time. We're not letting these people wipe us out. So we're gonna fight back. We're not gonna let them put dogs on us and all this kind of nonsense. But it was all talk. But the you know, man, I was 21 years old, 22, 23 years old, my first son and various things like that. You know, and prior to that I didn't see no future for myself. Prior to that, I didn't see a future where I was going to be a pliable part of a society. You know, I was degraded to being a young black man that could get a job at the post office or various things like that, but never in my mind, like now, I'm studying to be a teacher. Why I didn't think of being a teacher when I was coming through high school and into my early age of the 20s, why wasn't I even thinking about different things like that? You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't until after the 60s and the things that happened in the 60s caused me to begin to think this way. See, that's my point. It caused me to begin to think like I'm thinking right now, to the point where I'm 55 years old in school now. In other words, the 60s never died for me. I've been striving and struggling and trying to achieve what I began to dream in the 60s. I've been doing it ever since then. I looked under there and seen if it was there. I looked under there to see if it was there. I've been doing something. And I believe I'm very close to it now when I get my teaching degree. Because then I'm going to have about a 200-person audience for me to relate to them. The importance of education, the importance of self-awareness, the importance of government. You know, these are the things that I learned. I didn't read it in no book. We formed a government. We chose a president. We had Secretary of State. We had a Secretary of Education. It wasn't state like that. We exampled ourselves. We used the model that the Saudi Arabians, that not the Saudi Arabians, but the Prophet Muhammad in his time, 1,400 years ago, we used the same model to govern ourselves and to form our government. So that was, you know, that was on hands learning. So you can't tell me anything about government from, you know, and tell me just because you read about it, because I know the problems of government. But they weren't, here again, you know, the most significant thing that I hope comes out on this tape is that anyone that listens to this tape, the message that I want them to understand and to get is the fact that microcosm and macrocosm are the exact same thing. So that one individual is a government. And when that one individual relinquishes his power to let other people govern him, he just gave up his powers. Now, he says he's doing it with the vote. A lot more code comes along with that. You see, and this is what I learned in the 60s when I formed the mosque and did all the various things, because you find out from experience how people are when you make laws and they don't want to follow. Everybody wants their own way. You know, I never would have learned that not being given a chance in the American system. You dig what I'm saying? And we went ahead, and I went ahead and did it myself and got the experience myself. So, you know, like, you know, you got to get voted on and everything else to be a part of a government. Or read a book. I did it. He said, fuck it, we're gonna do our own thing. And we did it. And we learned a whole lot of things. So now I can respect government. That's my point. I can respect a Clinton or a Reagan. I don't necessarily agree with them, but I can respect them because I know the problems that they got. Because I had those same problems when we formed our government. The same exact problems. Where was we going to get our money from? And, you know, from the whole thing.
Can you tell me your feelings about the racial revolts during the 60s?
Well, actually, the racial revolts, from our point of view, wasn't even revolts. Unless you want to consider, as I said, the rhetoric that the Nation of Islam is talking about. On the other side, you had Martin Luther King, who was definitely not revolting. They were called demonstrations. Peaceful demonstrations. And this is one of the main things that we totally disagreed with. You know, now, dude, from 56 to 60, in my high school days, there were several race riots in school of a very small nature. But, here again, the media, this was happening all over the country. And it was all based on the fact that up in the north, we were seeing different things like the Little Rock incidents and the Alabama incidents. All those, you see all this on television, and you go into school talking about it, and some crazy white boy says something to a dude, and bam, that's it. You know, heard all this shit, man. You ain't saying nothing to me, and bam, just, you know, knock him out. And of course, that ain't gonna happen. He's gonna go get his boys. And the other dude's gonna go get his boys. You know, I don't call that a race. That's stupidity. That's ignorance. And it wouldn't matter whether they were white, black, blue, brown, green, or yellow. A revolt to us was a conscious attempt to take over the government. We knew we couldn't take over the government. So then we took step two, or plan B. That's what we went plan B. Fuck it. We'll create our own government. Because we knew we couldn't take over the government. So then our next thing was, you know, but those people that was just fighting and just rioting and breaking windows, we were not a part of that. We did not believe that that was the answer. The answer was self-government. Having your own manufacturing, having, you know, using, you know, we, you know, I'm talking about what I've learned now, because I really, you know, we talked all that then, but now I know how to do the things that I'm telling you about now. But these are the things that we agree with. So we did not agree with breaking people's windows. You know, we was talking about sabotage, and we wasn't talking about burning up our neighborhoods. We was talking, you know, we in talk. You know, we talked about, well, if we was going to do something, I wouldn't be doing this. This is what I'd do. You know, like that in basement conversations when we'd be sitting down talking about the issues of the day. You know, most of us was on the side of underground, sabotage, and various things like that, if that's what we were going to do. You know, but we also realize that, hey man, that ain't, you know, that's not logical to think that we're going to go up against, you know, in Cuba, they could do that in Cuba, and and we had studied Cuba and Che Guevara, and we had read Mao's Red Book too. You know, we was investigating every kind of system that we knew to form a system of our own. history. We studied African governments, you know, the old tribal, you know, ways, and, you know, all these different things, you know, in an attempt to metaphorically solve the issues of the day. But we positive, you know, we were like, I guess, like Aristotle and his, you know, a small group of, you know, students that's sitting down philosophizing and different things like that, never really thinking that they're going to go ahead and do any of this. You know, but, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old, this is what I would do, and, you know, that type of vibe. And, you know, our vibe definitely wasn't rioting and things like that. It was about take the government over, and we couldn't do that. So, as I said, the plan B was, you know, and I was the only one that actually did it. Of the groups, and we was talking about it, our first attempt was a group we called the Society of Ife, which is a Nigerian word, a Yoruba word, which means life, the Society of Life. And we formed the government, so, and it lasted about a year, year and a half. We collected dues, and we did all that, you know, and we went into the community, and we tell the community that it's, you know, a Back to Africa movement rather than, you know, civil rights, or even the Nation of Islam, is go back, is, you know, go back to Africa, and not back to Africa physically, but back to Africa in its metaphorical and mental sense, you know, studying the ways and everything of its culture and taking from it those parts, just like the founding fathers of this country did. When they formed the Constitution, they took parts of English Constitution and added some different things that they felt was the mistakes, you know, to correct the mistakes of the English law already. But they didn't just come up with an idea out of their head. They had models that they looked at. And we did the same thing. And we tried to give it to the community. We told the community everything we was learning and tried to get the community to, you know, become involved with us. Nothing was happening. Community was saying we was crazy. Walking around dressed up like Africans and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Were educational facilities available to Black Americans during the 1960s?
You know, this is a hard question to answer, because I have to answer it from several points of views. As an individual, yes. As a part of a group, being the African-American group or Black group, whatever, there's many, you know, at that time it was called Negroes. It wasn't as available. Most of the people in my neighborhood who wanted to go to college or anything like that did not think about they didn't have money. The only way we was thinking that we could possibly, and this was misinformation, like what they say in the Navy, scuttlebutt. This is all hearsay, wah-wah, bull crap that you hear in the street or hearing on TV and whatnot. But, you know, our concept is that the only way you go to college is to get a basketball scholarship or a football scholarship, you know, and it was prevalent in those days. So for higher learning, it wasn't as available. Most of the cats that went to college when I was a young man had gone with basketball scholarships. And in the 60s, it began to change. It did, you know, the people that I graduated with, some of them went to college without scholarships. I have a friend that went to a very prominent Black university, Howard University in Washington. And he went, you know, right after we got out of high school in the 60s, so he was in Howard University in 61. It was available, but not as available as it is now. If I'm not mistaken, there was no Pell Grant and various things that there are now. You know, it was available, but it wasn't, how would say, it was limited available. It was available in a limited amount.